accumulating, no extinction, no way, and no understanding, and no attaining. Because nothing is attained, the Bodhisattva, through reliance on Prajna Paramita, is unimpeded in his mind. Because there is no impediment, he is not afraid, and he leaves distorted dream thinking far behind. Ultimately, Nirvana. All Buddhas of the three periods of time attain Anuttara Samyat Sambohi through reliance on Prajna Paramita. Therefore, know that Prajna Paramita is a great spiritual mantra, a great bright mantra, a supreme mantra, an unequal mantra. It can remove all suffering. It's genuine and not false. That is why the mantra of Prajna Paramita was spoken. Recite it like this. Gate gate paragate parasamgate bodhisattva. Okay, we will now start the Theravada chanting. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dhammang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami. Panati pata viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Adinadana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Kamesu micchacara viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Musavada viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Suramiraya majjhapamadatana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to the Buddha, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, and all the worthy ones. They call opening verse. Opening verse for Heart Sutta. Verse on opening a sutta. The page before page one. The unsurpassed, profound, and wonderful Dhamma is difficult to encounter in hundreds of millions of aeons. I now see and hear it. Receive and uphold it. I vow to fathom the Tathagata's true meaning. So this one you must make determination. Then if you really make this determination, you can understand the sutta better. The condition will arise for you to actually have the understanding to receive it. Okay, now we can start. We will continue with the short notes. You turn to the first page of your short notes. Okay, this one is the 15 Heart Sutta dated 10 June 2012. So today is the 17th of June. So next week, 22nd, or no, more than that, 24th, we have another class. 17th, 24th. Then end of the month, I have to cancel the class because I will be in Singapore. So make a note. Sister Lee will send out the notice. So I remember it's 1st July. 30th is Saturday. Sorry. 30th is Saturday. 1st of July, there is no class. We cancel it. Okay? Just make a note. But next week is on. Okay, short note taken to assist in developing a clearer and better understanding of the sutta as discussed. Part 1 is the recap and emphasis on the previous lesson. So we discussed this last Sunday. According to the Buddha, mind is the forerunner of all things and mind make ade. Hence, through mental consciousness, we can perceive the phenomenal world of consciousness. All of the physical, mental and nature's phenomena within existence. So this one, anybody don't understand. You don't understand, you can put up your hand, you can ask. Anybody don't understand? I think it's quite clear there. By now, you should understand this part. Maybe I will explain to you the meaning of the phenomenal world of consciousness. So you see, the Buddha always quote through Dhammapada verse 1 and 2. Our mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. Mind make ade. Everything arises when the mind arises. So as a human being, we have this physical body and this mind. And this is not the real entity that you think you are. This is just a condition arising from my mind. Like we discussed last Sunday, segmented body and mind. This segment of our life, understand that? Like this segment of my life, this life you call me Brother Teo. So this is one segment of me, but this was never me. Just like previously I was born so many times. None of those are me. These are all karmically conditioned for my mind. So because you have this mind, the mind together with the physical body, the five senses, we are capable of arising sense door consciousness, the respective seeing consciousness, hearing, smell, taste, tactile and thought consciousness. So this six sense door is the basis of life. This is how you come to know the world. This is how you perceive the world. Understand that? Without your senses, you are nothing. You are nobody. Actually, the funny thing is, with your senses, you have been deluded into thinking you are somebody. You are still nobody. These are all naturally arising. Condition arising. You remember the physics experiment that we talked about? The battery, the bulb, the switch. When everything is order, in order, functioning, you on the switch, is like contact. Understand? No? Contact between the battery, which is your energy field, your life force or your consciousness. Then the bulb lights up. You become conscious. Conscious of what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel and think. So this is exactly what is happening. Upon contact, it just light up. Means the consciousness arises, but there is no one to see, no one to hear, no one to think. But you deludedly cling and grasp onto what you see and what you think. That's why you become deluded. then you grasp, you react. Then all your conditioning, your wrong view all trigger off. That's how you become what you are. You grasp onto this five aggregate of form and mind, not knowing what they are, not understanding what they are. You cannot see their universal characteristics or impermanent suffering state and non-self. That's why you still gullibly cling onto it. Yeah. And because it is so real, look like so real, it's so difficult for you to see the anatta nature behind. I always tell all those Dhamma friends or Kayana Mitta during the earlier, how can you say this body and mind is not you? Most of them will agree. Because it can animate into a human being, understand? It can smile, it can laugh, it can cry, it can talk and do so many things. It can become emotional, at times so loving. That's why you are caught by it, understand? But when you truly meditate and look within clearly, then you start to see the condition arising, causal phenomena. There was no body inside there. Then thought arise due to respond to memory. Yeah. It's all the conditioning within this form of mind. Then when you start to see, you will understand the Buddha's teaching, the dependent origination, how your mind functions, how you become what you are, the law of nature that governs all of life and mind's operation. Then you start to see the co-relationship between the nature's law that governs life and existence, law of karma, law of the mind, law of nature's truth, Dhamma. So all this will become clear to you when you have this awareness or heedfulness within to see it clearly. So the human body and mind is what you need to understand. Without this mind, nothing exists. But even with this mind that can trigger all sense door consciousness to create the phenomenal world, to create all of the what they call experience that you come to experience, like your seeing consciousness, everything within your field of vision, it become real to you. It like arise ready, so real, just like what you see now, everything created by your mind, understand? That's why this is the phenomenal world. What is a phenomenon? Anything perceivable by your mind is a phenomenon. So all of your seeing creates a phenomenal world. All of your hearing creates a phenomenal world. Your smell, your taste, your tactile, and your thought process is the same. Okay, so far, is it clear? Yeah? Can follow, huh? Okay, now we move on. Yeah? Because mind is the forerunner of all things, mind is chief, mind make ade. Hence, through mental consciousness, we can perceive the phenomenal world of consciousness. So now this is clear to you, huh? Okay. All of physical, mental, and nature's phenomena. You know what is physical phenomena? Whatever within your physical form, your kaya, all of the movement and activity that you can perceive, these are your physical phenomena. Your mental phenomena are like the mind dharma that Xuanhua talked about, understand not? The one that is not so solid, not perceptible through your, what they call, external form. Like your feeling, your perception, your thinking, activity of mind, all those things. Then the consciousness. All these are called mental phenomena. The phenomena of the mind. Then nature's phenomena are what you see in the midst of nature. Like you see the flag moving, the leaves, the tree, the passing car, the rotating fan. These are all nature's phenomena. You feel the breeze coming to you. You feel the rain and all those things. All of the vibration. These are all nature's phenomena. Yeah. So basically the entire universe got these three. Physical, mental, and nature's phenomena. That's why in the midst of life and existence, you will experience and see them everywhere. And all these phenomena, they exhibit these universal characteristics of impermanence, suffering state, and non-self. very clearly. For those who see, they always see every moment, every instant. Yeah. But the trouble is living being, they don't have this silent mind. They are not heedful. Most of the time, their mind is clouded. They have a lot of thinking, the thought. And there is delusion. That's why they can't see. Like the sun or the moon, when there is cloud, you cannot see. Then maybe once a while, glimpse of it come out. But unless you have trained your mind, it's very difficult, not easy. Okay, we move on. In bracket, I put definition. Anything perceivable by the mind is called a phenomena. So now it's easier. Whatever your mind can perceive is a phenomena. Okay, contemplative wisdom. This is the second turning wisdom. Can arise when you silence your mind. That's why the key emphasis is silence your mind. Always remember, don't try to think. To reflect, contemplate, and inquire into the Dhamma as taught by the Buddha. Be aware and mindful of all physical, mental, and nature's phenomena. This is what you have to be aware of within your daily life. To see clearly the moment of arising is sustaining and passing away of all phenomena. To realize the penetrative wisdom born of bhavana, or cultivation of the four foundations of mindfulness. This is what satipatthana is. The mindfulness of the body, kaya nupassana. Mindfulness of this feeling, vedana nupassana. Then mindfulness of citta, or content of consciousness. Then the last one is mindfulness of dhamma, dhamma nupassana. So this four foundation of mindfulness involve the third turning, bhavana. That's why the wisdom is very penetrative. And this one, no thinking, is the direct seeing. You awaken to the truth, the reality, there and then. Then the next paragraph explains to you how this can be done. With the silent mind in pure awareness, one can be aware of all the vibration and phenomena within one's body and mind. One will be able to perceive deeper into one's mind consciousness. Because you seldom go into your consciousness, your silent mind. Because most of the time, you know what you are doing. What are you doing? You think a lot. You use the thought a lot. That's why you never know that there is another nature within when there is no thought. You try to experience the space between thought, the silence between two thoughts. You can have that. That is the beginning, the gradual beginning. Learn to have more moment of interval between thought. That's why don't go and think. When your heedless thinking continuously proliferate, it's very difficult to experience the silent mind. So one will be able to perceive deeper into one's mind consciousness. All phenomena can be perceived via the silent mind. See, the emphasis is always on the silent mind. And it can also witness how these phenomena come and go, arise and pass away, their birth and their death, etc. Hence, realizing their impermanent and empty or non-self nature, you will see them everywhere within your own bodily vibration to your heartbeats, your pulses, your feeling, your thought activity, perception, and consciousness. Then all of the physical phenomena, etc. The physical phenomena that you can actually perceive are your breathing, understand not? Your blinking of your eye, your turning of your hand, your bending, your stretching, your movement. All these are physical phenomena. So when you are silent and aware, your mind and kaya move as one without thought. So this is how you can perceive them. When you are silent, all this will come to be. But when you are not silent, what are you doing? You are lost in thought. You are actually preoccupied with what you think and what you are trying to do with your thought. So that is the reason why you cannot be aware. You cannot perceive the reality You are always playing with your mind, your thinking mind. You are heedlessly worrying, planning, thinking. That's why human beings seldom in the state of silent inner awareness to live life, to understand what is going on, to experience all of the beauty and wonders of life. They are too busy thinking, planning and worrying about life. So much so, they never leave. So this is the part you have to be very careful when you cultivate. Then we go on. You only have to silence your mind to see them all as they are. When you perceive via your mundane mind or thinking mind, those are the condition that is not real. What you perceive via your mundane and thinking mind is not real condition, because they arise via your thought, which is respond to memory. The reality before the knowing is very different. So this part you have to understand. When you cultivate, when your daily mindfulness is there, you will understand what I say. Means the awareness before thought, before the naming, labeling and knowing. It's just like just now, the physics experiment. The battery, the bulb, the switch. The moment you make contact, it lights up. Light up means what? You become conscious, understand not? So like seeing. The moment of sense experience is upon contact of mind. The consciousness arises. Like the Buddha said, in the seeing is only the seeing consciousness. It just arises naturally, condition arising. But through delusion, we grasp. We think there is a thinker behind, a thought. We think the thinker thinks the thought. You become conscious. You think there is somebody to see. That's why you associate and grasp at what you see. Then the moment you grasp, you react to what you see, because you are affected through your Sakkaya Ditti. So the daily mindfulness will enable you to see clearly what is going on, the reality, the truth behind everything. So human being has the tendency to react to sense experience because of ignorance, the Buddha said. To solve the human being's problem or suffering, one needs the Dhamma. Life without Dhamma is not easy to cope. Without the Dhamma, there will be delusion and ignorance with regards to understanding who you are and what you are. Without self-knowledge, one will grasp and cling to one's fire aggregate of form and mind, hence conditioning your suffering or dukkha. Samsara or wheel of life within existence can also take the form of man and nature must harmonize. You see, wisdom is always linked to harmony. When you can accord and flow and in perfect harmony with everything, you have wisdom. When you resist and fight and want things your way, you are in disharmony. So because of that, there is no wisdom. So samsara or the wheel of life within existence can also take the form of man and nature must harmonize, and that there are these five universal law or order that governs life and nature. These five universal order or laws, two of them are scientific laws. We have gone through physical law, uttu niyama, and biological order, bija niyama. And the other three are spiritual law, law of karma, or karma niyama, law of the mind, chitta niyama, and finally the law of truth, or dhamma niyama. When you have the right view or right understanding with regards to these five universal law or order, you are like, which are like the secret of life, then you will know how to live life. When you know how to live life, you will know how to experience all of the wonders and beauties of life. Then life will be very meaningful and beautiful. That is, through emptiness is wonderful existence, like what the Heart Sutta will tell you. So understanding the three right views with regards to law of karma, Four Noble Truths, and the law of dependent origination or dwelling or paticca-samuppada are very important, because it can transform your understanding of the Dhamma to enable you to live the enlightened life or noble life. Thought is limited and egoic, hence it cannot free you. True mind is only pure consciousness without thought. As such, it can see things as they are without the conditioning. One will come to understand clearly that in the seeing, there is only the seeing consciousness, no one to see. That is before the knowing and before the delusion of Sakkayaditi carries through. To condition you into grasping and clinging onto what you see, your craving or reactive mental intention is due to your habitual tendency born of wrong view. The next one is very important. Understanding thought and consciousness. This one is a very important topic. This one I try to help you all understand last Sunday. You remember? I draw on the whiteboard. Your original pure nature is just aware without thought, before the knowing. That's why it's spacious awareness. But the moment you create a thought, you restrict, you input the content into that spacious awareness. That's why you focus, you put in your mental intention. You put in all your, what they call, mental aggregates. So all this is how you create the thought. That's why last Sunday I asked you, you have been using thought for so long, but do you know how you create thought? Most of you don't understand. So now I put in writing, easy for you to understand. Once we input the content into consciousness, into our awareness, then consciousness becomes thought. Hence, thought equals consciousness plus its content. Understand, right? Consciousness is like a receptacle. Because consciousness is actually pure awareness. Understand, right? It can receive anything that you throw into the consciousness, the mind, the thinking mind. So your thinking mind got mental intention, got this aggregate of perception, can actually give rise to thinking, activity, emotion, feeling, fear, everything. So the whole of your sankhara, inclusive of your feeling and perception, vedana, sanya, and sankhara, these three, they are the content of consciousness. That's why your four aggregate of mind, you have feeling, perception, and sankhara. Actually, feeling and perception is part of sankhara. So sankhara is the content. Consciousness is the receptacle that holds it. Understand? That's why you become a thought, citta. So that's how you create. So they call it the seven universal. There are seven universal, what they call, component to form a thought. Minimum seven. So this one is common to all. So this seven, one of them is your feeling. Contact, feeling, perception. Then you got all your other things. Your life force and all those things. Then you need to have one-pointedness or ekagata and all those things. Then you have to have what they call attention also, manasikara. So all these are part and parcel of the content. Initially, before the knowing or the arising of thought, there is just this awareness which is spacious. The moment you focus on something, you input the content of consciousness, then consciousness becomes restricted and become a thought. Take for example seeing. Initially, in the seeing, there is only the seeing consciousness, no one to see. But the moment you are preoccupied with what you see, without the wisdom or yoniso manasika, wise attention at the moment of sense experience, at the moment of sense experience, then the egoic mind born of wrong view or sakkayaditi, means wrong view with regards to the self, the atta, had arisen already, causing you to grasp onto and cling onto what you see. Then your habitual tendency of like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant, will arise to condition your hindrance of mind to arise. Because your like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant, sensual desire and evil, these are the hindrance of mind. That's why throughout the day you experience so many of this. That's why very difficult for you to be peaceful. Your heedless thinking, the hindrance continue to arise. So this is what you are facing. That's why without the daily mindfulness, without your ability to train your mind to be heedful, the Buddha knew you are as if dead. That's why he said under Dhammapada verse 21, heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The heedful never die. But heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedless are as if dead. So that part become very clear once you understand this. So as form is the product of thought. Now this one I teach you something new. This is for your understanding. This one you cannot find in other place. This one is very deep, very profound. As form is the product of thought, hence thought can see form. But form cannot see thought. So thought has got higher intelligence than form. Likewise, since thought is the product of awareness, hence awareness can see thought or be aware of thought. But thought cannot see awareness because awareness has got higher intelligence than thought, which is limited and egoic. So this one, when you understand, it becomes very profound. Do you understand why thought is... You see, they always say, form is the product of thought. But through science, you can also correlate in that. You know Einstein's equation? What is Einstein's equation? E equals to mc squared. What is E? E is energy, isn't it? Correct? Right? Yeah? So energy is what? What is energy? Your thought is an energy or what? Is your thought an energy field? Your thought is an energy field there. So energy field actually is made up of one mass. What is mass? This is form, isn't it? Whatever they have mass is a form, isn't it? So C is speed of light. S-P-E-E-D, speed of light. So this speed of light is a very fast entity, the square of it. That's why a little bit of mass can create a lot of energy field. Understand that? So actually from here, scientists also came to conclude, energy and matter is the same. That's why the Buddha is very wise. In the higher teaching, the higher sutta, the Buddha explained. He said, form is a product of thought. All this mass come about through energy field. To give you an example, it's just like last Sunday. We ask ourselves, how does this table come about? This is a form, isn't it? Product of what? Of course, you will tell me the carpenter do it, isn't it? How does the carpenter do it? He used thought, isn't it? Understand? He used thought, understand? That's why the world, the star system, everything is through thought energy. They become what this thing is. So that's why karmic also, karmic force create this form and mind, understand? That's why there is this physical form, this consciousness inside. So actually, all of this form that you see, that you come to experience, they are the product of thought. That's why we all can use thought to see them. Understand? You can see my form, I can see your form, you can see the table, everything. But this table cannot see your thought, understand? Because it is made from a lower intelligence. The thought that creates this form has higher intelligence, so it can see, it can perceive it. But likewise, how does your thought come to be? How does your thought arise? You remember I asked you, your five aggregate of form and mind, you got your form, your feeling, perception, activity of mind, sankhara, and consciousness. These are the mental. How does the mental arise? If feeling is not you, perception is not you, thought is not you, consciousness is not you, then how did it arise in you? I already explained to you how you create thought, isn't it? So how you create thought? Huh? Through your awareness, isn't it? So that's why thought is a product of your nature, your awareness. That's why this mundane mind is not you. It's a byproduct from that true nature. Because through your ignorance, you input content into that awareness, then you come out. And you gullibly cling on to it. You say, I feel. Understand or not? That's how you get caught. So because thought is a product of awareness, awareness can see thought. Understand? That's why you can be aware of thought, aware of your feeling, aware of your perception, your mind state, your consciousness. Thought cannot see awareness, understand not? Because it's higher intelligence. So this is how you finally will come to understand, and this is where the biggest understanding, the profound prajnaparamita is all about. The perfection of wisdom is the realization of this. So this is something not easy. Okay, you got any question or not? Before we move further. So far, can follow or not? Can follow, eh? Okay, very good. Okay. The inquiry for developing the meditative wisdom. This one is just to help you. Like I explained to you the last Sunday. Are the feeling, perception, sankhara or activity of mind and consciousness that arise in you, I put in inverted comma, really what you are? If feeling and perception, etc., are you, then when they arise and pass away, how come you did not die? Understand? If feeling is you, when the pleasant feeling disappear, you should die with it there. But because you didn't die, so feeling cannot be you there. If it's not you, then why did it arise in you? How did it arise in you? Then who are you? What are you? If the five aggregate of form and mind are not you, then why did they arise in you? And who are you? What are you? This is what meditation is all about. You go into your consciousness with a silent mind and find out and understand it deep within, awaken from there, then no more doubt. This is how you awaken using the silent mind. Not go and think about it. Thinking can never awaken you, because thought is egoic, thought is limited, thought has got different intelligence, it has this grasping, because it's limited and egoic. Even those with wisdom, when they have this wisdom, you must have more or less perfect wisdom, then only you can arrive pure thought. Pure thought is still a thought, must always understand that. No matter how pure, it's still a thought. It's still below awareness. Understand? So that's why when you read it, metta, loving kindness, when you have compassion, karuna, mudita, rejoicing, or upeka, these are still mind state. Understand? The four Brahma vihara, very pure. That's why there is no suffering inside there. Understand? But this is not Nibbana, understand? That's why I always say the third noble truth, the absence of suffering is not Nibbana, understand? Nibbana is cessation, not absence of suffering. Cessation of suffering is Nibbana, yes. No more, cease, not just absent. Absent means just a moment of pure thought, understand? So you have to slowly develop the clear understanding from within. Okay, we move on to part two, the Heart Sutta. Definition, profound prajna, wisdom, wonderful wisdom of those who cultivate the bodhisattva way to become Samasambuddha. Superficial prajna, limited to the understanding of the four truths, which are the four noble truths and the 12 link or dependent origination of condition causation as taught at the Theravada level. Form Dhamma are the perceptible Dhamma at the form level. First of the five aggregate of form and mind, the Rupa. Rupa, you got two. Physical form, first aspect. and external form, second aspect. Then you got mind Dhamma, non-perceptible Dhamma. The remaining four aggregate of mind, feeling, perception, activity of mind, and consciousness. You need awareness or mindfulness to see the mind Dhamma. See, now you understand. If one cannot see form Dhamma, then it's very difficult for them to see mind Dhamma, which are more subtle, much more subtle and much less perceptible. Cultivator or superficial prajna can end birth and death of the delimited segment or segmented body and mind, but they are unable to transcend the birth and death of fluctuation or the thought. This one we have gone through last Sunday. They can be enlightened because they don't have ignorance anymore. So at the moment of death, there is no more rebirth consciousness, but their mundane mind is still there when they are still in the midst of living life. Means there are five aggregates of form and mind of the Arahant. They still have thought, understand? This what they call outflow, mundane mind. That one has not ceased. That one can only cease when you take the Bodhisattva away. Then turn to the next page, the last page. Previous life, you can be born as animals, pretas, demons, or devas, etc. Then this life say you are a human being. So which one of these is you? Now you understand, none of them are you. They are all karmically conditioned out from your karma, the segmented life that you are born into through your karmic. Okay, so we finish part 2. Then we move on to part 3. Meditation. This one is just a summary of what we went through. Because I just don't have much time last Sunday. So I summarize for you what you need to know. These are the retreat that we had. 2nd to 8th of August 2012. Retreat at Cempaka Buddhist Lodge by Ajahn Achalo. June. Yeah, thank you, Ingvi. Yeah, somebody, you can go back and do your own editing. June, not August. Yeah, so June. You don't have a pen, I have. Later on, you can borrow from me. Yeah. So it's 2nd to 8th of June. Conditions are very conducive. And the retreat was very well received by all. It had also benefited so many of them in so many ways. This was made possible because of the continuity of mindfulness, bhavana, and great wholesomeness expressed by all throughout the retreat. And it had also resulted in such good condition for many of the participants to experience rather good meditative state and development of their five spiritual faculties. Your spiritual faculty, you know, your saddha, virya, sati, samadhi, and panya. These retreat condition activities are very conducive for good bhavana. Bhavana is meditation and wholesomeness training to set the base for all past cultivation to connect back to us all, to help speed up our cultivation. Every day you all chant as participants, you take refuge, you renew your precept, pay reverential salutation, maintaining quietness, do sitting and walking meditation and mindfulness bhavana, followed by listening to the Dhamma, straightening your view, sharing of merit, transfer of merits, and dedication of merits, offering and receiving dana, radiating metta, etc., reporting, Q&A, sharing, etc. All these are very, very wholesome and rather meritorious in nature, and together with the non-humans, our collective group consciousness has created a very conducive environment which is charged with a lot of very good meditative and wholesomeness energy to benefit so many of us, including all those who had one way or other contribute to the success of this wonderful retreat. For those who can feel, who can actually come to understand, you will know. That retreat was very, very special. This type of retreat is more intense and useful and the five spiritual faculty or mental faculty and the mind can develop very much faster. It will encourage and motivate many of the participants who have benefited from it to diligently determine to continue their post-retreat cultivation. Do not be complacent. This is the advice. Otherwise, one will lose this good state of trained mind within a very short span of post-retreat heedless living again. The ability to maintain and continue this good momentum of post-retreat cultivation by integrating it into the daily life is very important. So this is what you have to do, carry it on. The momentum of continuous post-retreat devotional bhavana or meditative and mindfulness training, we are having a very good and disciplined religious routine, and daily mindfulness or awareness training are very important, are equally important. A good religious routine can be in the form of at least twice a day of strict devotional and bhavana training. That is once in the morning and once in the night before one sleeps, followed by paying respect to the Buddha every time before you leave your house and every time when you return to your house. Maintain awareness of all your bodily action and movement within the present moment to cultivate your daily mindfulness until it's very stable. This training of mind in Kaya Nubasana is to slow down your heedless habitual thinking mind and not your action and movement. You have to make a note, not to slow down your action, but slow down your thought, your thinking. Because your thought, like the Buddha said, your mind is the forerunner of all things. It runs ahead of so many things you do. That's why your mental intention keep proliferating ahead of you. Every moment of awareness or sati will help you break the momentum of your heedless thinking, habitual thinking, thus enabling you to stabilize your daily mindfulness training. Now, this one I explained already. Every moment of awareness break the chain of heedless habitual thinking. Your habitual thinking is like a what they call continuous heedless habitual momentum. Understand not? Because you are so habitual, like very mechanical, you keep on repeating this. Understand not? So there is a momentum there already. So every time this momentum carries on, you are like caught in the vicious thinking. That's how people can get into what they call the heedless thinking. They think a lot. The thinking cannot stop. So the moment you have awareness, every moment of awareness, you break that momentum. The moment you break, like any momentum, you swing something, let's say a ball or what, there is a force involved in there, to cause it to move in there, either in motion or what. Then that velocity that you establish, the mass times velocity is the momentum of that moving object, understand not? So that momentum, when you swing already, you need very little force to maintain the momentum, understand not? But the moment you break it, you stop it, you have to start to swing again, it takes a lot of energy or strength, isn't it? This is what you are doing, precisely. Every moment of awareness, it breaks. That's why the heedless thinking can stop. But if you once a blue moon only aware, most of the time the momentum is there, then no effect, understand not? Like you swing something, then you just try to stop it. Before you can stop it, the momentum, the ball still swing over, understand? The object still continue to swing, so you cannot stop. It's just like you use a leaf or what, you try to stop it. Your leaf, no, don't have that power to stop it. Understand? It just like hit through, prop. Then it just continue to move again. So that momentum, you must have stability of mindfulness to be aware. The moment you are aware, the chain of thought, the habitual heedless thinking stop. Then when it stop, it need momentum for it to come again. Understand? So if you are aware and your wisdom is there, it cannot start actually. That's how your mind can stabilize. Your mindfulness, your heedfulness can stabilize. But you need to train this mind. You need to develop the wisdom, the understanding. First turning and second turning. through hearing, contemplation, inquiry, then after that through bhavana, through training the mind in heedfulness, mindfulness. That's why the third turning, the daily mindfulness, is very important. Without this, very difficult. Understand? Mm-hmm. Okay, so we finish. Huh? You got any question on the notes? If you don't have, then we go on. Huh? Okay. Ah, yes. Yes. Use the mic. Use the mic. Yeah? Use the mic. Yeah.
I just wonder whether I'm doing it right.
Yeah.
Let's say, okay, I'm putting out the clothes to dry.
Yes.
So I don't want to think of anything. I'm just telling myself, okay, I'm drying my clothes. I'm drying my clothes. Is that the way to do it? One way.
Because you have to explain clearly. Because when you say I'm drying my clothes, when you say that means you use thought. Understand?
No, thought
when you dry your clothes, it's your hand.
Okay.
Understand? Not? As it moves down to take the clothes, your mind is with it. Of course, you know it's a clothes, but you don't go and think. You know it's a clothes. You look at the thing, but not the concept of the clothes. Understand? That's why you have clarity of what you see and your hand. The moment you move, you are aware. Your mind is with it. Then when you touch that thing, you are aware. Then you take it out. Then how it moves, that phenomena, you are aware. Then you just take it out and you hang. The whole movement, you are aware. You can be aware of your hand movement, aware of this clothing, because you can only be aware of one thing at a time. Understand? So as long as you are aware, you don't try to know. Don't try to arise any wisdom, because it will come to you. But if you try to know, you are not cultivating heedfulness already. Because the thought try to know, the thought want to know, am I doing it correct? Like just now you asked, if I want... When you say all this, you cannot do already. When you do means you just act, move, aware, just aware. Like walk naturally, just aware, body and mind as one. Like the Buddha said, walking, I'm aware. Standing, I'm aware. Turning, bending, I'm aware. That's like the blinking of your eye. Yeah? If you can be aware of your blinking of your eye, that is the beginning. Yeah? Then later on, you will be aware of how you turn your hand, how you move, how you bend, how you stretch. All this will come because mindfulness is like that. I remember Achan Jagaro, he's very good. 20 years ago, I think 21 or 22 years ago, he gave a talk in Brickfield. It's very good. He is the first monk after Achanyantra, my teacher, able to explain mindfulness so clearly. He said, mindfulness is like when you turn on the tap. You know what is a tap, isn't it? TAP. Yeah? Initially, no water. Yeah? Then you have to use a bit of effort, turn it, turn. Then, when you are able to turn a little bit, then you start to see the drip. Eh? At first, once a blue moon, one drip, aware. Then another drip. But after a while, if you are patient, then your mindfulness develop and get a momentum. Then you see this awareness take more and more moment. Then the drip become faster and faster. Understand not? Then drip by drip by drip by drip, then it connect. Then one day it become a flow. When it become a flow, that is the beginning of true mindfulness, true awareness. Means you flow with your action. That's why the real sati is a flow. Physical, mental, and nature's flow, phenomenal world. Your mind and the phenomena as one. No words. You just flow with it, silent. That is the real sati. That's why you must cultivate and you must have this condition to ask. Otherwise, there are so many more things I cannot tell you. If you are not there, I tell you, it's wasting your time and my time. Then you are using thought to try to visualize what I tell you. That's why you go and do. Then you ask questions. Like our sister here, because she tried. Although not so correct, but at least she did. Then I can explain to you. That's why you must ask me. You must cultivate. Otherwise, you cannot ask. Because when you are not there, you cannot ask on this type of question. You are not ready to understand. So if you cannot ask, there is no condition to explain. That's why you must do it. You must go back and cultivate. That sati is not what you think, not what human beings think. And it's very difficult, I tell you. For those who have the ability to do, is because in the past, we have done a lot of hard work. So you don't think, wow, it's so easy. But I explain like so easy. No, I realize it's so difficult for a living being, for cultivator, because even the last 8 or 8 years I came out to share, I realize it's so difficult. After I explain, also so difficult. At first I thought it was quite easy because I did it so easily. Within 2 weeks I got it. And when I got it, I understand what this thing is. But I realize not so easy. Not so easy. Very few people. Yeah, the mic, let Andy.
Brother Teo, I think the other thing is, you know, we have a tendency to, like what you mentioned just now about the mindfulness.
Yes.
I can get it for a short span of time.
Correct, yes.
But then it just disappear again.
I know.
But I realize when I get into a very tight situation, I'm in trouble now. Life is so short. I mean, just reflect short.
Yeah.
But that particular situation then create mindfulness in the sense that, I'm in trouble now. Then you see your mind very mindful.
Then you are very aware, very alert.
But once that problem or whatever is solved, then you fall back into your normal situation.
I know.
You know what I'm trying to say?
Yes. So for this type of situation, you need to understand, like I explained just now, Ajahn Jagaro mentioned, mindfulness, you must have the understanding that you have to train it until it's very stable. That's why I say don't be complacent. Otherwise, like in retreat, because the condition is such that it's so conducive, that you are so mindful inside, so aware. Like some of the participants told me, they just don't want to go home. They just want to be there. Then even our Saturday class, after we finished, we had this session. There's one lady also same. She told me, she said, Rachel, it is so nice. Like sitting there Saturday, I explained to her what happened. She said, until that moment, she still can feel that it's so beautiful. It's just the Dhamma. He just feel like he can just sit there forever with me. They'll just talk the Dhamma, the mind. But out of the retreat, he said, suddenly, very fast, the mind goes back to the old habitual tendency. And what hit her was, after that weekend, she received a phone call from the, I think, family or what. She went back. She realized very close friend of her passed away. That's why the heart affected again. Then she said, when out of the retreat, the whole thing come back and disturb her again. But when she was at the retreat, she was so different. She was so calm, so relaxed, so aware. And she was able to accept a lot of things, the way things are. The mind doesn't have any problem at all. But is it out of the retreat, this thing come back. So I explained to her, if you are not able to carry this momentum of cultivation into the daily life, that is what will happen. That's why a lot of people went to retreat. They find it very conducive, very soothing, very peaceful, very calm. Then the moment they come out, maximum within 1 week or 10 days, sometimes 2 or 3 days, they realize they are back to their usual heedless way of living. And the habitual tendency come back to them. And they can still become emotional, angry, affected. Then they still have this like and dislike and all those things arising. So the way to understand all this is you need to have this wisdom stabilized. If the wisdom is not stabilized, you can't do it. That's why this lady told me the same. He said, actually I understand the Dhamma, but I cannot leave it. I say, you haven't really understood. If you have understood, you can leave it. Because I say, you still have a good friend, a very close friend that died. Because you cannot understand what the form of mind is, what the five aggregate is. You still believe it's a human being, your close friend, die. Understand? That's why it affects you. Understand? The true awakening, no more delusion. You see very clearly what that form of mind is. Even your own form of mind is so clear. Condition arising. Cause of phenomena is not what you think they are. This physical body form is a product of thought. Understand? Karmically conditioned out. And the consciousness also byproduct of that nature, also product of thought. Understand? So you will come to see very clearly that this is not you, condition arising, cause of phenomena. That's why you cannot be affected anymore. And it's very different. So regarding Andy's case, it's another condition. It's not in the retreat, but when he is faced with very tense condition, like very critical, he normally take charge. That's why he become fully aware. He wants to understand how to actually clear the situation. That's why you can have that seriousness, understand? The earnestness means you really want to attend to it. So mindfulness is the same. If you have the ability to see the importance of what this thing is, how important it is for the living being, because it's not just this life, all of your subsequent and future life. You can break this and develop the freedom or liberation, then this wisdom is going to follow you, going to be with you for many, many lives to come. It depends on what you want. If you want to cease through arahant, you can. But if you want to continue this way, you can also. It can be done. So all this is possible when you understand the importance of it, when you see the importance of it. Then you will go all out, full time, to cultivate. Full time, don't get it wrong. Last time I got one lady, Kayaramita. She came and see me after I explained the talk in the year 2005. She said, "Relative, you say full time is I must resign from my job." She thought she must resign and go full-time retreat. I said, no, full-time is continuous cultivation. Whether you are working or not working, continuously you develop your bhavana, your mental training, your wisdom, your understanding. That's why you maintain heedfulness throughout the day. That's why apamada, very important. So luckily she came and asked me, otherwise, that's why words can be very deceiving. When I say it's a full-time job, means doesn't mean you have to, what they call, resign from your job. No. Full-time is you make use of that cultivation to continuously cultivate. Whether you are at home, in the midst of career, doing your work, your job, your household chores, or outside in life. You have to maintain that mindfulness, that daily mindfulness. Actually, to tell you the truth, without this stability of daily mindfulness, there is no real meditation. Real meditation only starts when there is this continuous mindfulness, heedfulness. When you can do it throughout the day in the midst of life. Otherwise, you cannot see. You know why? Your sense doors are so fast. When you are active in life, every moment there is thinking, every moment there is consciousness. You see, you hear, you smell, you taste, you tactilely feel and think. And the three very powerful doors is the seeing, the hearing and the thinking. Understand? And these three constantly actually create activity for you. That's why sense door consciousness is so fast. Sometimes you can see and think and plan. Then after that you can hear. Like everything can happen simultaneously, understand? Because the mind moves very fast. That's why mind is the forerunner of all things. But if you don't have awareness, heedfulness inside, you cannot cope, understand? Because every moment of sense experience, you already lost in thought. That's why you cannot see, you cannot understand what is going on. And when your mind is like that, you forget about developing the wisdom because you cannot understand what is going on inside, how you are conditioned into such mind state, how you become what you are, how you take the form of the evil root that condition your mental suffering. You cannot see. You can't even know how it come about, how it condition you into all those states. how your mind become what it is. That's why it's through this awareness that you understand. And when the moment you understand, you know how to reverse it. Like the Buddha said, when you know the cause of arising or suffering, you will know how to manage your life better, so that the next moment you see or you hear or you think, you are different now, because you have reflected, contemplated, and have seen how this mind got deceived, understand not, deluded, and how it conditioned you into mental reaction that caused your stirring of your mind to make you angry, to make you selfish, to make you fearful, all this. How does it arise? It's all from your delusion, nothing else, ignorant. Without delusion and ignorance, you are just beautiful. Yeah. The mind does not stir. The mind just see things as they are and understand and experience as everything just the way it is. So beautiful. Then it understand. Nobody die. No one born, no one die, no one sick, no one old. Then everything is just condition arising from my mind. Very clear. Yeah. So this is how you slowly, slowly develop the wisdom and the ability to see for yourself, to awaken for yourself, how you become what you are. And this is the real Dhamma, not all the theory. If you can see yourself in action, one moment of awareness is enough. Very clear. The moment you see, you wake up. It's no more a theory. It's no more like you read from the book or somebody tell you. Because this is from your direct experience. You see it happening that way. You see how you, yourself, this mind, get deceived. And how it entangle and get into those trouble. Then it is from your own direct seeing, then you realize you actually can free through an understanding. You just let things be, then you silence your mind. The moment you silence your mind, the emotion, it ceases to be, because there is this energy inside there, like anger or emotion. The very flowering of that emotion or anger or that thought is the very ending of that thought. So anger is not you, condition arising. So you don't have to do anything, you just silent. You don't feed it with any more mental energy or mental negativity or evil root. Then it ceases by itself. And then the moment it ceases, there is so much tranquility and peace and silence. Then you realize, hey, originally my nature was like that. I don't have to do anything, understand not? Because of delusion, I go and stir it, I go and create all these things, understand? And I give meaning to the aggregates of form and mind. That's why I grasp and cling. That's why things become like so meaningful, so real to me. So when you start to develop the wisdom, all this reverse. Then when all this reverse, then you realize, oh, it's because of delusion, that's all, nothing else. The moment you understand, you're free. You don't have to try to be free. That's why wisdom free. Without wisdom, cannot. You can talk, no use. You can try. How to? They always tell me how to actually let go. You go and try. Then they say cut at the feeling, cut here, cut there. You go and try. If you have wisdom, no need to do anything. It's wisdom that free. Yoniso manasikara, wisdom at the moment of sense experience. You have means you have. You don't have means you don't have. You cannot try to cut. Then some even more gullible before they die. They try to be aware. Then the last thought moment, they say, you can have the free mind, no more rebirth. You enlightened. You go and try. You don't have the wisdom, you cannot do it, understand that? Even before you die, the subconscious take over, because you cannot maintain the awareness. You don't even know what the true mind is. The fear, the worry, the anxiety, the karmic will come and condition you into all those mind states. That's why your last thought moment, most people, they don't have a choice, karmically conditioned. But if you have the understanding and the wisdom, if you have cultivated your awareness, sati, before you die, somehow the sati come back to you, and you know how to cease if your wisdom is already there, stable. That's why you don't die. You don't have to die. Then the last thought moment, no problem. Because that mind, different. It understands what is the true nature and what is the mundane mind. And the mundane mind that create all this, even the Arahant can understand. There is still outflow. There is still this thought active in them. But no more delusion. That's why the last thought moment, when this form and mind cease, they don't have ignorance. That's why they don't take rebirth. You remember last Sunday? Arahant. They no more rebirth. The segmented body rebirth no more. But rebirth of thought fluctuation still there. That's why it's not a complete cessation. So all this you can come to understand if you develop the cultivation accordingly. Okay? What's the time now? We have to move a bit faster. Otherwise... We are at page 33. We finish number 3, I think. Actually, we touch on number 4. But never mind, you go backward a little bit. Page 32, the third paragraph. I read from there. The Holy One of the fourth stage of Arahantship has ended the birth and death of the delimited segment. But they have not yet ended the birth and death of fluctuation. Fluctuation here refer to the transformation, which are the source of birth and death of the delimited segment. Because the birth and death of fluctuation refers to nothing more than all the various thought, false thought. The false thought flow through along. One thought ceases, and the next thought is born. Then that thought ceases, and the third one is born, and so forth. That kind of successive production and extinction is a kind of birth and death. See? To the Mahayana, it is very different. So at the fourth stage of Arahantship, false thinking or false thought has not been extinguished entirely. That's why the mundane mind is still there. The stage of the Bodhisattva of the Mahayana, the great vehicle, must be reached in order to put an end to birth and death of fluctuation. That's why the mundane mind can collapse no more. Then there is no more false thought. The birth and death of fluctuation is the root of our birth and death. Why is it that we are born and then die? Only because we have false thought. And where do the false thought come from? From ignorance, delusion. It is because there is ignorance that all false thoughts are produced. So that is how the Arahant, he come to understand all the, what they call the third type of emptiness, emptiness of analyzed Dhamma. Okay? So now we go on to the fourth one. Bodily Dhamma emptiness. The fourth kind of emptiness is cultivated by the conditioned enlightened one. These are the Pacheka Buddhas. Who has the bodily experience of emptiness of Dhamma. So this one is through the dependent origination, the 12 link. They see very clearly how the mind works, how it functions. The dependent origination. So the bodily Dhamma emptiness, they come to realize through this. Then the last one is true emptiness. This is the final understanding. Bodhisattva cultivates the contemplation of the emptiness of wonderful existence. When Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva was practicing or cultivating the profound Prajnaparamita, he was cultivating the contemplation of emptiness of wonderful existence. When he illuminated the five aggregate or skanda and saw that they are all empty, he was cultivating at the level reached by profound prajna with the ability to obtain from profound prajna. So this is how the Bodhisattva cultivate, very different. They see the deep profound emptiness in all the five aggregate, not just analyze Dhamma or form Dhamma. But my Dhamma. That's why the five aggregates are empty, really empty. Then the poem says, practice the way, cultivate yourself, and do not search outside. If you wish to cultivate the way, don't look outside yourself. For outside there is nothing to be sorted. You should search within your own nature. So you understand, huh? Last time we went through, huh? You silence your mind and be aware inside. Understand? Huh? When you are aware from inside, you are using your silent mind, your nature. That's why this one can see how thought come to be, how you create thought, understand? How thought come about through response to memory, through your conditioning, through your delusion. You must see how this come about, how they condition it into what it is. This is how the dependent origination come about. That's why when you have awareness, sati, mindfulness inside, you will witness the Buddha's teaching. Everything happened inside there. The Four Noble Truths, the dependent origination, the universal characteristic, the three evil roots, the five hindrance of mind, the five aggregate, the five spiritual faculty, the seven factors of enlightenment. Everything is inside. That's why you see them all very clearly. And this Dhamma is not a theory. It is something you can actually experience, experiential inside. You can see them. You can actually put to test the Buddha's teaching, and it can confirm to you. That's why the investigation will stand up. Because it is the truth. It is the Dhamma. So this is the part where you need to understand. Reverse the light within. You should search within your nature, not outside. The prajna of your own nature is the deep and secret cause. Means that the deep within your own nature lies the secret seed. Then white billow saw to heaven, the black wave sees. Here is the commentary by this Master Xuan Hua, because he wrote this poem. So he said, when one cultivates the way, the white billow, which are like waves of rolling water, are wisdom. And the black waves are like your suffering or your affliction. When affliction has ceased, your wisdom soar on high. Thus the profound prajna paramita which the bodhisattva cultivates or practice is both high and deep. It is deep because when you are in that high place, you look down and don't see anything at all. So this is the explanation of the poem that Xuan Hua has come up with. Then the other one is Nirvana, the other shore. Effortlessly is climbed. You see, the word effortlessly means what? You don't have to use effort. You don't have to try. The trying is by the thought. You just silent and cease. Everything is just the way it is. It will fall back to the original state. Because your mind, originally, before it stirred, it was already peaceful, silent, aware within. It's already perfect, understand? Your Buddha nature, your true nature, you don't have to do anything to it, understand? But through delusion, you don't understand. You grasp at the fake one, and thinking that it's you, and you try to solve your problem, which you create through your fake one. Like Sun Tzu, he create good and bad. That's why he got dust. Then he tried to clean until, polish until it shines so that no dust can alight. But in the first place, you create a dust, understand? All this is your mind's discrimination. That's why when you understand the true mind, there is no mundane mind, no duality. There is no good and bad, no right and wrong. There is no such thing as wholesome and unwholesome. That's why ultimately, no attainment, no enlightenment, no old age, no death. Nothing. No Dhamma. So all this you will come to understand. So Nirvana, the other shore, effortlessly is climbed. With wisdom you can very naturally reach the other shore of Nirvana. Very, very easily, very, very naturally, and you got to the other shore without any need to expend any effort at all. See? That is the true cultivation. That's why the truth is the opposite of what the human being thinks. You think you must strive on very hard, do a lot of things to develop the enlightenment. But when you understand, you see, the one that has the wisdom will know. It is wisdom that free. That's why Chen Hua also said, with wisdom, you can very naturally, see, without any effort, reach the other shore of Nirvana. Very, very easily. He used the word very, very naturally. You get to the other shore without any need to expend any effort at all. Time and again, time and again. Don't miss this chance. This one is for all of you. This is a very important reminder. The time when we cultivate the way is the most precious. So don't let it go by emptily. Time and again. Don't let the time in which we could cultivate Prajna Paramita go by emptily. Don't let it go by. Means don't allow this opportunity or condition to slip away. Like we always remind ourselves, it's very difficult to be a human being. Even more difficult to be born during the Buddha Dharma or the Buddha Sasana period. Then it's even more rare and difficult when you have the condition to be a human being and a Buddhist encounter with the Buddha Dharma, and yet you throw it away. Understand? Yeah. A lot of people are born during this Buddha Sasana, but because of their past karma, they are in the wrong religion. Understand? That's why they cannot benefit. Yeah. And a lot of them, they are not born as human. That's why very difficult too. In Mahayana, there's a very famous saying, last time we went through already. The Buddha always said, under the Mahayana Sutta, he said the human form is very difficult to come by. Zansan nanta. Then the Buddha Dharma is very difficult to perceive. Fopa nanwan. Or encounter. So you have the condition to have this human birth during the Buddha Sasana, and you have the condition to come into contact with the Buddha Dharma, you must make full use of it. Otherwise, this window, once closed, you are going to miss it for a very, very long time. You are going to really, really miss it for a very, very long time. So, again, another reminder. Next page, page 34. Care for it, be diligent, take hold of the divine innocence. When you are filled with energy and alive with the spirit, means you are with your nature, you should not forget to pay attention. You should not let that time go by, because that is the time to cultivate and to attain true prajna, the doctrine of the divine innocence. So this one, the Mandarin word, I need you all to explain to me. The note 10. What is tianzhen? What does that mean? Okay. Now I know. Now I remember the baby, very innocent, 很天真. Okay. The natural spontaneity that sage and child alike possess. Correct. Naive, very innocent. Very innocent. Like a baby just born. So this part is very true. Okay, next one. I'm clear mirage. Thus the news arrived. The events are likened to an unclear mirage. You wish to see them, yet you look at them and don't see them. You listen, yet you don't hear anything. At the time when your seeing is like an unclear mirage, you get a little news. Now it is there, now it is not. See what is originally esteemed. You look and say, what you see is real, but it doesn't seem to have any perceptible characteristic. Then you say it doesn't have any perceptible characteristic, yet it seems like you are seeing something. What you see is what is originally esteemed, your own true nature. So this one only the enlightened one can understand. So you just bear with it for the time being. Okay, we finish at least that part. So we will end here. So the next one is the conditioned body. This one more and more interesting already. We will be going into the five aggregate. So if you can, you go back, read up a bit. Then if you got question next time, I will suggest you write it down. If you are very shy, you write it down, like in the retreat. You put on my table here. then I will read it out. Nobody know who asked. I realize a lot of people are very shy. So if you have any question, you write it down. Don't worry. Yeah? Okay. Before we continue into the next meditation, do you have any question? Ah, yes. Use the mic.
This the naive or innocent of a child, how different is it compared to ignorance or delusion?
Oh, it's still got ignorance, because when they are conditioned and born into this body, it's a karmic form in mind, understand not? That's why sometimes, although it's a baby, what you can actually create out of the analogy is, because this baby, their brain is still very pure, understand not? They don't know how to talk, understand not? They cannot recognize anything because you have not conditioned the baby. You haven't spoken to them. You haven't say, pa, pa, ma, ma. Normally it's the mother first, easier to pronounce or what, I don't know, ma, ma. Then they only can one syllables at a time. So they take time to learn, understand not? So during that time when they are a child, those who are mother, you will know. I have seen my young kid when they are born. I saw the baby looking at the ceiling, everything. Look, it's like they are looking, but there is no concept, no word, no idea. They see things as they are. That's why they are very cute, very innocent, like sparkling. Like this is when you don't have a conditioned mind. Then actually that is the direct seeing, very near. The only difference is the enlightened one has wisdom. With all the memory, the conditioning and everything, this one doesn't affect them, doesn't disturb them. They can still see things as they are because they don't think. The memory is the memory. You know the computer, isn't it? You all, every day you play the computer, isn't it? I think Sui are not around. Or Mi Feng around. Mi Feng will know, you ask her. She is an electrical engineer. You see, computer got two types of memory. What are they? You know what is RAM and what is ROM. Read only memory and random access memory. So the electrical or computer analyst or the engineer who actually create that chip, they also know your brain work like that. They also got this random access memory, understand not? So that it doesn't disturb the operating system, understand not? They are all under the RAM. That's why you have very big RAM, understand not? But your ROM is very small, understand not? Your ROM is used for operating system. But when you want to access this information, your RAM can be very big, but when it's needed, only the access, understand? So the enlightened one work like that. There is memory, but doesn't affect them. They need, they access. That's why for me, you remember, when I speak, after I have a phone call or somebody talk to me on something else, or after a while, I forgot why I say all those things. That's why I have to ask you. And once you trigger off a condition, then I can recall. Means this one create condition for this memory to come out. Understand? The memory is there, but I cannot retrieve it and hold it because the mind is different now. It doesn't grasp and hold on to anything anymore. So I need condition. So that's why when you tell me something, then when I recall, it click like random access memory. So it come out. And then I will know how to talk again. I will know how to continue from there. Because what I speak to you is not in my memory, understand? But I need to know why I say that and when. What was it that I said just now? Once I can recall that, then I will know how to continue. So the child don't have that, understand? The child is because they don't have this memory. They are not conditioned yet. They are like a sheet of paper, very pure, understand? So they actually see things as they are. But they don't know how to observe. Understand? They don't know how to maintain the awareness and the attention. That's why I told you all, when I was looking at this thing 20 over years ago, suddenly I realized when I look at things, it's totally different from last time. Last time I realized I never really looked. I got a lot of thought inside there. There are a lot of concept of this thing. Then when I see cup, the moment there is a cup, you don't look already. Like you look at your husband or your wife. Every day you look. You won't go and pay attention. You say, yeah, the same one. Because you never aware. But if you are aware, you look different. Because you direct perception of what that thing is. You don't have an image of what that thing is. Understand? That's why Krishnamurti always say, can you live without the image? Without the observer and the observer? Because everything is just the way it is. No observer and the observer. You see things as they are. Understand? That moment, that instant, just the awareness. Then the thought doesn't proliferate. It can know whatever it is, but it does not go and think and create unless it wants to have an understanding. Then it throw out an inquiry. How can I let the living being understand? Like this morning talk at SJVA. Last minute they go and change the topic. I don't know. I only saw it last night in the SJVA website, I think. Brother Jim, the president, he wrote. Then I suddenly read, the topic has been changed. It gave me a new heading, Importance of Buddhist Devotional Practice. My original title was Importance of Training Your Mind to Have Heedfulness to Understand the Meditation as Taught by the Buddha. That's why when I saw that one, then I reflect. Yeah. I cannot plan what to talk and what to speak. Then I reflect. Hey, it's a better title because what I originally had is meant for meditation, for meditator. But that Sunday, very few meditator. I wanted that title was because last talk I gave there was about the five hindrances and the five spiritual faculties. Once you understand this, I suppose to continue on how to train the mind to have heedfulness to understand the meditation as taught by the Buddha. So I want to go into the meditation. But I realized there is very few meditators there. Very few who came and listened. Yeah. But because it's recorded, that's why I choose that title. Otherwise, I would choose that title. But whatever it is, if it's meant to be, things will happen. That's why the title will change. And this is a better title. Because what happened was, today when I was there, Brother Sui An, he met this, also a lady, Dolly Teo. She brought along her daughter. This lady and the daughter came because they have problem. So Sui An told me, after the talk, maybe need me to be with them and explain to them a bit. So it was actually very difficult, you know. But luckily, because that talk was based on that, and they were also there listening. So later on, Sui An got to attend this, what they call, exco meeting. So he spent only 5 or 10 minutes with me, just to get the, what they call, background sorted out. Then after that, he left. Then I was left to talk to them, together with the other lady, Cindy, who off and on came. So when I spoke to them, it was a very tough case. Very, very tough case. You see, this one not only involved the lady. The lady was actually in a form of depression, according to Sui An and all those things. He got a children, a son, 12 years, having a lot of problems. Doesn't work and all those things. So she wants to understand why is it like that. Then many things happen. Many things happen. So I told her, I said, are you a Buddhist? He said, the mother used to go to temple, traditional one. Do you know what is the five precepts? Don't know. Do you know what is the Dhamma? Don't know. No wonder. Like that. So I told her, I can explain to you what this is, how, but you have to do it yourself, and it's not easy. You must be very determined. So it took me quite a while. I actually spent about 45 minutes or nearly an hour, I think, with her. And the lucky thing was, after I explained all this thing, you know what she told me or not? She said, "Brother, thank you so much." Then I look at her. She said, "I feel so light now, so relieved." Because I explained to her how she can be the mother of this child and how they all connect. I said, so all through the law of karma, so she started to believe and understand. Then the devotional practice was so important, because I explained how you can cultivate the Buddha Dharma by just starting with the devotional practice as taught by the Buddha. And it's very direct. You actually no need to spend a lot of time. You only need to be very sincere, full of sincerity. Then you must commit yourself. Then develop the spiritual faculty, the sadha, virya, and sati. Then samadhi and panya will come. Then when you are very, very serious, very sincere, and you persevere, you follow the advice of the Buddha. Because when you do your devotional practice, like just now I mentioned, morning, night, and all those things, you actually cultivating already. Then you invoke the power of all these merits to help you to make aspiration, so that you can avoid the foolish, meet up with the wise and enlightened one, so that Nibbana can be realized. And all this will pave the way for there to be causes and conditions for you to move. That's why you must do all these things. Then it becomes very much easier. But do not be complacent, because this devotional practice and meditation, bhavana, you must carry it out. Not only once a week you go to temple, you attend the 1 hour plus puja, listen to Dhamma talk, not enough. Like this type of session, even for those who attend my Tuesday class, Thursday class, Saturday class, and Sunday class, at least they have continuity of 4 sessions. Then if they do their daily mindfulness, they move very fast. But if you only attend 1 or 2 of the sessions, after that you go back, you continue with the way you live, your heedless thinking, your heedless living. All this is so powerful, it will condition you very fast back to your old habitual tendency of living your life that way. But no matter what it is, if you attend, it helps you so much, because it prepares the base for you to receive truth. And these are very meritorious, like I explained this morning. Even the devotional practice, what you come to attend is so much more meritorious and noble than the devotional practice that they have it in the SJBA temple, although it's a very good one already. But what you are doing here, the Dhamma session, is a very, very deep one, and you are more, I should say, more consistent, because we have been nurturing you step by step, and you are serious, you will know. Your understanding has transformed a lot, has changed a lot. And these are the things you will inherit. You may not know now, but in future, all this understanding will come back to you. Will come back to you. Then when you are ready to share in the future, you will come to know, because this is how you receive. This is how the condition will arise for you to share. Then the more you share, you benefit more people. Then your nature starts to become different. Then because of your great compassion, your great, what they call, wisdom, all this is going to create that condition for you to perfect what you want to do. That's how the Buddha can become a Buddha, understand? The 10 perfections can be perfected, because they continue to liberate beings. They continue to cultivate with a lot of love and compassion and wisdom and sincerity. So this is how actually you need to slowly develop the understanding of it. Then it can be done. Okay? Just now, who asked the question? Oh, okay. Ingvi, yeah. Continue, yeah.
Yeah. If innocence or naive of the child who aware of things without thoughts, without differentiating or memory.
Because they don't have any memory, they are not taught, they are not conditioned by anybody. So it's like a clean slate, understand? The brain is pure. But then the moment you feed them, they learn. They learn how to suck. They learn how to, the mother's order. The mother's, sometimes the baby know. They can smell you. If it's not the mother, they will cry. They will know. That's why the baby learn very fast. So all this, you observe, if you are observant, you will come to understand all this.
Does it mean this is the Buddha's nature in...
No. That's why I told you it's slightly different. It's an analogy only. Because this one is a condition without wisdom. Whereas the enlightened one, like I explained just now, is with the wisdom there. Because you have to actually have this conditioning and memory, everything, and yet you can understand the truth and the reality and not mess up by it, not entangled by it, not disturbed by it. Means like the lotus. You know what is a lotus? From the swamp, from the pond, very dirty, very muddy, but it can come up. Then it flower. It stay above, understand? But it's still within samsara, understand? It's still within the world. It's still within all the existential world. There is still all the karma and all those things. There is still all the evil roots, everything. So down there is the existential world. That's why this lotus understand. It is within. It is part of it, but it is already enlightened, pure, above it. So that's why it transcends the world. But it can still live in the world because it connected. That's why the Buddha can come, the Bodhisattva can come, but they are not affected. Because their nature is different. The mundane mind no more. And that wisdom, that perfection is so different. That's why they can understand what this form and mind is, not what they are. And they know this is a condition arising vehicle, karmically conditioned out for them to use, to live, like this form and mind of mine. You can call it gratitude. It's not me. But it is karmically conditioned out for me to use, understand not? The vehicle is my this physical form. The mind is my tool to experience and live all of life. Understand not? Whatever that I want to understand and experience, I can use this tool, this mind, to understand. Because that nature cannot come out. Understand not? That nature cannot create thought, cannot talk. Understand not? But it can be aware. It can develop the understanding and the wisdom. It can see things as they are. But it cannot come out and talk. Understand? That's why meditation is to connect to this nature and from this nature develop the wisdom. The moment you have the wisdom, then this one will advise this form and mind what to do. That's why this form and mind can transform. Then it will have all the noble quality. Then it will not suffer anymore. Understand? Because of the wisdom. But the whole trouble with living beings is they are not connected, understand? And they are actually conditioned into this form and mind through karma. That's why they don't even know who they are, what they are. So they all the while deludedly grasp and cling onto this and think this is what they are. That's why every time they suffer, they become miserable, they blame. Blame everybody, blame everything. Sometimes they blame themselves. And they continue like that. That's why I told this lady this morning, I said, do you want to change for the betterment of your life? And do you want to really help your son? If you want, you just follow the advice of the Buddha, then you can bring about this transformation. And surprisingly, she can, I don't think she truly understands, but she can like, at least got a glimpse of what the possibility is. That's why before she left, she told me, I feel so light. He said, thank you so much. I am so relieved now. Then he said, I will definitely follow your advice. I will learn all this. That's why it's very different. Last time, I realized that the living being, when they are in this state, they cannot understand. You talk to them also no use. You know how she started or not? When she started, she tells Sui An and me, he said, the son told him, I told her, got one of the sessions, he said, like the head here, he said, like last time they go for this psychic thing, he said, like somebody taught him to do this, pierce something into the head, then they got like psychic ability. They can get well, they can get woman and all those things. Right? So the son like know that because last time they did all this, now they are confronted with this punishment. Is it? There are, you know, 10 or 12 of this non-human inside controlling him. Is it? He said the leg also don't belong to him. The body also don't belong to him. And these are the people inside that causing him a lot of suffering. Is it? Oh, the mother panic like anything. That's why if you have not really gone into all this, you never know the world, our, this planet and this universe. That's why it is a totally different world outside there. Without the wisdom, the Dhamma, you cannot solve problem. The human problem is tremendous, actually. And you cannot interfere because this is karmic. Karmic, you must understand, then you reverse it. You go and interfere, it backfire. You cannot interfere. Understand that? Everything is cause and effect, cause and effect. So that's why I explained to her. I said, you have to develop the understanding. You train yourself, you change your life. Then with your whatever understanding, you try to do something to help your son and yourself. Then it will bring about a better life for both you, your son, and your family. And all these are possible. And she really like have the faith. Very funny, nowadays people like can understand faster. Last time cannot. So the world in a way has changed. The consciousness has changed. Okay? So about the innocent one, okay, I don't know whether I have answered you or not, but I try my best to explain to you the difference. Because a lot of people don't understand. They thought it's the same. So they want to be a child. They want to forget everything. You cannot live like that one. Understand? Because the world is the world. Like the lotus on the pond. You have to be in the world. Understand? Like the Buddha. He cannot be only peaceful when he's in the temple. Understand? Jetavana temple. Or in the mountain. Or in the cave. He must be peaceful. Everywhere, understand? In the midst of life, in the midst of society. You cannot just run away. If you run away peaceful, there is a one-sided peace. Of course, you can choose to go that way. Nobody say it's wrong. Because it's up to you, the individual. So when you understand, then you will know the ultimate liberation of freedom is wisdom. The moment you understand, you are liberated. You are free. You don't have to do anything anymore. And this is the beauty, like Sun Hua said. When you have wisdom and the understanding, you realize, actually no need to do anything. Effortless. Krishnamurti also said the same. But you're always confused by the Noble Eightfold Path. Noble Eightfold Path got right effort. That's why last time a lot of people came and asked me, Brother Teo, why J. Krishnamurti say effortless, the Buddha use right effort? I say, yeah, both also correct. They look at me. Really, both also correct. Because what the Buddha teach you under the four right effort is at the thought level, understand? That's why he teach you right thought and wrong thought, understand? That's why right effort, to abandon the wrong thought that has arisen. Then the right effort to prevent the arising of the wrong thought, because it's at the thought level that you use effort. But when you come to the purification of mind, the Buddha never say use thought. Understand? He talked about sati, mindfulness, the four foundation of mindfulness. He never say go and think. Understand? When I walk, I think. He never say that. When I walk, I aware. Everything is awareness. Awareness of the body, the feeling, the citta and the dhamma. So when it's awareness, you don't use effort. Understand? You just aware without thought. And the awareness without thought is actually very near to your true nature. Very near. Before the knowing. That's why finally when you come to understand, there is no contradiction. Both are correct. Because they explain under different circumstances. Krishnamurti is talking about the Dhamma that is beyond thought. But he don't have a structure, understand? Because he is not a Samasa Buddha, understand? He come with a different mission. He come to fill in that gap that trap a lot of so-called cultivator. Because a lot of cultivators are trapped in memory, trapped in thought. That's why his mission is to break this. Yeah. That's why when I heard, he said, acting according to memory is not acting at all. Wow, I immediately rejoiced. I said, that is precisely what I saw. I realized, this is the one that creates a lot of conditioning, a lot of fear in you, a lot of insecurity in you, and a lot of habitual tendency in you. That's why the anusaya are all trapped inside memory. And the memory is the one that actually responsible for that type of thought, the wrong thought to come out. So when I realize all this, then I realize the memory is useful, but not to accumulate and attach. Like memory, you use it for what? You must remember how to go home, isn't it? Your name, your bank account, understand? How you sign your check. All this you need memory, isn't it? These are useful memory, understand? But when it comes to psychological matter, you know what is psychological? Emotional one, understand? Psychology means involve your emotion, your thinking and all those things. When you have relationship, why must you keep all this memory that condition you to become unhappy and misery? You know what Krishnamurti used? The scars of memory. You know what is a scar? Before it heal, a lot of scars. So all these are your unhappy thoughts. Your insecurity, your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your misery, your unhappiness. Because certain things happen, understand? Like child abuse and all those things. Like when you were jilted, or you have certain life situation that you become very fearful, very unhappy. Like you separated from your loved one, or you make a mistake, then you regret a lot of remorse. So all this you keep as memory, then you go and worry about it. Every time there is condition, you think about it. Then you are trapped in the cocoon of thought. That's why you can become depressed. You can suffer. Sorrow, lamentation, and grief grip you. This is the wrong way to use thought. Understand or not? That's why it's a wrong thought. The memory is not meant for that. Understand or not? But then, you are a human being. You have a brain. Understand? You will stop. Understand or not? So that's why it will arise. But when you have wisdom, it has got no power over you. You will understand, it's just a thought. Understand? And because there is memory, it will condition it to arise. That's why thought is respond to memory. Then when it arises, if you understand them for what they are impermanent, they come and they go, they are not you. They are condition arising, cause of phenomena. It's only a thought. How come it got power to make you so miserable, so emotional? And so then when you reflect, contemplate, and you understand, then the next moment you meditate, you realize, hey, everything is from here, stir out, condition arising, cause of phenomena. And then you know, thought is a product of awareness, conditioned by memory. Then your whole mystery gone. The secret of life understood. That's why you liberate. Then when you have that wisdom and understanding, you are so different. There is thought, yes. There is memory, yes. But you no longer deluded by it. You no longer affected by it. You cannot cling and hold anymore. You let them be. Understand not? When you need, take it out. Understand not? That's why I can still have good memory. That's why I can still, when there is condition, recall whatever happened. But it doesn't affect me anymore. It just allow me to have the condition to share. Understand not? To maybe let people understand. That's why when you start to ask, there is condition for this type of Dhamma or understanding to come out. Otherwise it cannot come out. Because like the Buddha said, the handful of leaf, you remember? What he understood is like the forest, the leaf in the forest. But what he has taught you is only the hand. And I really, really understand that one very clearly. Because he has so much wisdom. Because at that time, they cannot tap what he understands. Because they don't have the condition to ask all the Bodhisattva way cultivation except the close disciple of him. And except when he went up to Siddha heaven, when the non-human came and talked to him, the higher being, the more evolved being. Apart from that, because he is the fully enlightened one and he has perfected it, that's why when there is no condition, it cannot arise. So you need to cultivate, then you create the condition, then you ask. And then there is condition, I will explain. And then you start to hear this type of thing. Today what I spoke, I never spoke before. The last 8 years, even though I came out and shared it here, I never spoke before. Because these are the things that people cannot understand. It's very difficult to understand. Even last Saturday, I explained. I don't know why I explained to them last Saturday. You asked Stephanie. Stephanie was there. I explained how you come as a human being. Then how you are connected. The form, the mind, and the nature. Then how you become what you are. So all those things. Because somebody asked that question. That lady who at the retreat, she asked. Then from there, everything come out. Then I wrote all over the board. That place was better because that board was very much bigger than this one, double the size. So I was able to explain. Then after that thing, they rub it off. Yeah, I told them to rub it off. Otherwise, people will be very confused. They say, what type of meditation is this? Explaining all these things that nobody know before. And the words become very confusing. So if you have the what they call condition, when you cultivate, then you ask, then the Dhamma will flow. The condition will be there for it to arise. Okay, what time already? I think we better meditate. 5:10. We got another 50 minutes. You can start immediately. For those who need instruction or what, I will give you the relevant instruction. You just relax your body and mind. Make sure you have a stable posture. Then your backbone, try to be straight. Then you just silence your mind, completely silent, relax, aware and silent. Then you have not yet trained your mind. You need to decondition your heedless thinking through the mind sweeping method. You just feel aware, relax, feel aware, relax. You feel and check whether there is any tension, tightness or stress within. If there is, you just relax it. No need to think. Okay, now I give you some basic instruction. Then you can develop the training of the mind to meditate. Silence your mind, close your eyes, relax your body and mind. Then feel your forehead, feel. Relax every part of it. If there's any tension, tightness or stress within, you just relax, relax and relax. Then you move your attention down to your eye muscle. Do the same, relax every part, all of the ciliary muscle. Then you relax your facial muscle. For those who find it difficult to relax the facial muscle, you can try to radiate a radiant smile. Because the moment you can smile, there is joy. When there is joy, you are naturally relaxed. You don't have to force yourself to relax. Naturally, you will relax. Then after that, you can radiate loving kindness or metta to yourself. So that you can have a more composed type of mind. You can start off by radiating kindness to yourself. May this body and mind of mine be well and happy, well and happy. May it be free from all danger, free from all enmity, free from all ill will, fear, and mental negativity. Then may this form and mind of mine to be free from all suffering, free from all mental and physical suffering. May there be peace, may there be joy, and may there be happiness. then you move on to radiate loving kindness and metta to your loved ones. May my loved ones to be well and happy, feel the well-being and the happiness and radiate to them. Then may they all too be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering. May their mind state to be free of fear, worry, anxiety. May they also be without enmity, without ill will and untrouble. May they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May there be joy, may there be love, and may there be peace. Then you can radiate love and metta to all your Dhamma friends. May all my Dhamma friends within this vicinity, known and unknown, seen and unseen, and all beings throughout the entire existence, may they all too be well and happy, well and happy. May they all too be free from all suffering, both mental and physical suffering. May their mind too be free from all fear, worry, anxiety. May their mind state to be without any of this enmity, ill will and untrouble. May they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be joy, and may there be peace. Then after that, you can come back to your facial muscle, feel, just feel, silence your mind and feel. By now, you should be more peaceful and calm. Then you just relax every part. Wherever there is any tension, just relax. Then you move your attention to your neck, your shoulder, relax, your hand, relax, back to shoulder, relax. Then you move it to your heart or your chest. This is a very important location within your body. This is where the seat of consciousness is. This is where your heartbeat is. This is where the life force comes and arise. This is how you tap your life force energy, the pulse of life. So you just silence your mind and feel. You can feel the heartbeat, stay there. If you can feel any other vibration nearby, stay there, silence your mind. You can use it to anchor your meditation too, initially. Then for those who can't, who are new, you just silence your mind and relax every part, like you relax your forehead. Then you move your attention down to your stomach, relax, move it on to abdomen, relax, buttock, leg, relax. Then you reverse the whole cycle from your leg, buttock, relax, abdomen, relax, stomach, relax, then your heart, you relax. Then you move it on to your shoulder, neck, facial muscle, eye muscle, and forehead. After you have done this one cycle, you should be more calm, more relaxed, and more heedful. Because you don't think, you just feel relaxed. So you just maintain silence and maintain awareness at your nostril. Now you train your mind to be mindful of the in and out breath to stabilize it. The Buddha called it anapanasati. Anapana is in and out breath, sati is mindfulness. So when you are mindful of the in and out breath, means like the Buddha said, breathing in, the mind is aware, means mind and breath move as one, in harmony, without thought. There is no thought, no gap. Mind and breath move as one. Then breathing out, you are aware, do the same. Because when you feel, you will feel the breath. The moment you feel, you are aware together with the breath. Just follow it naturally. Then this in and out breathing, if you have not stabilized it, the mind will wander or think a lot. It's okay. Untrained mind is heedless. It will wander off. So you just silence your mind. Continue to maintain awareness. Every time it wanders off, you bring it back. Develop the patience, the perseverance. Then you will be able to train this mind. as the mind become more and more aware, no more distracted, the calmness will arise. The mind will experience peace, or they call piti, spiritual rapture or spiritual joy. When piti come to be, you will feel very good. It's like your mind is so calm. There is so much joy inside. Then you continue to be aware, relaxed and silent. If you are drawing the deep breath, just let it happen, no problem. Because when you are mindful, the breath becomes long naturally by itself. Every in-breath and out-breath is like very long, take a very long time. Just let it happen. As long as you are aware, mindful, just continue to stabilize it. Then after that, if you are able to actually relax more, silence your mind more, just maintain the awareness, this breathing will become more and more quiet, more and more quiet. Then it will stabilize into what they call sukha, then paucity. Then finally, it can become the state of collectedness or samadhi. So you just relax and silence your mind and train. And when the sati become very clear, very stable, for those who have already trained, then you can relax your body and mind. Then silence your mind and let things be. Then you use it to meditate. You use it to observe how your senses become conscious, how the mind upon contact create consciousness, and how when the consciousness arises, you deludedly grasp and cling onto it, and how it conditions you into the various state. Then you also have to be aware of how the hindrance of mind come to you. Then at the same time, you aware of the what they call spiritual faculty that has been developed. So all this will help you understand what is going on. So for those who already know how to meditate, you continue to relax and silence your mind and just silently observe with awareness what is going on. When you are in the posture of sitting, formal meditation, don't try to know anything, just aware enough. Then train your mind to be very stable, relaxed and calm. Okay, I will ring the bell after about 10 to 15 minutes. Then you can actually slowly and mindfully come out of meditation. Then we will continue the second session. those who still want to meditate, you can continue. For those who are now, you can slowly, mindfully come out of meditation. Try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness and awareness that you have stabilized and developed. You need to carry this trained mind state into your daily life. You have to develop the stability of mind to be aware throughout the day when you come out of the meditation. The daily mindfulness to be aware of all action and all movement in the present moment is the most important. You can stabilize that daily mindfulness, the real meditation will actually happen. So in the midst of life, you can be mindful and aware. That's how you really come to understand a lot of things. You really can actually develop the wisdom of how your mind functions and how it actually gets itself entangled, stirred and reactive, create all the various mind state and mental reaction to sense experience. Then the understanding can give you a lot of wisdom. And through this understanding, you will slowly understand clearly what the Buddha meant by the cultivation of the four foundation of mindfulness. Okay, now we open it up for the Q&A second session. You can make use of this second session to ask me any question you want, and also report the meditation. You can ask me whatever that you want to know with regards to your meditation, then the Buddha Dharma, and also how you can apply what you have learned here in the teaching to help you understand what is going on in your life, to develop the training of mind to have more understanding of the Buddha Dharma. Okay, now we open it up. Anybody wants to report their meditation first? Or you have any question, you can ask. Yes. Pass the mic to... just press
it. Brother, you're talking about awareness and thoughts, right? Having less thoughts or don't indulge too much in thoughts. What about indulging in positive thoughts? Happy thoughts. Is this activity beneficial?
Okay. That is in your daily life or when you are sitting? Is it in your sitting or in your daily life? Pass the mic back.
No, both in sitting and in daily life.
Good. Okay, I will answer you. You see, if you truly understand why you are here sitting in the form of meditation, then you will try not to create that thought. Because this wholesome thought or right thought is like when you radiate metta, understand or not? You radiate loving kindness thought, like, may this body and mind of mine be well and happy. There are two ways of doing it. One is like verbalize, not much feeling, not really from the heart. But you do it from the heart, then it's not a thought. It's a combination of what your heart feels, understand not? Then this feeling that goes out with it is metta, understand not? It's not like a parroting, understand not? Not like verbalizing. May I be well and happy without feeling, understand not? But if you do it with your heart, then it's different. It's not a thought, understand not? But if you say you sit down and reflect and contemplate all the good thought, actually you are not really creating good thought. You are actually trying to think, understand not? So when you try to think means what? Can you give me an example, what are the thoughts you will create? The so-called good thought, what are they?
No,
Yes.
Good thoughts, referring to the good deeds that you have done, the compassion.
Or you recall to mind.
Yeah, recall.
You recall to mind. Then how does it influence you? How does it condition you? How do you feel after that? Yeah.
You feel good.
Okay. Means your mind state is more happy. Yeah. So this one actually, a lot of what they call people who actually, when they develop the daily life, sometimes they got nothing to do. Then they want to recall to mind the happy moments. They want to refresh their memory of the good time and all those things. So a lot of these thoughts can arise, but they are not actually training of the mind. They are actually conditioning you to arise the memory of what you want to recall. So when this memory arise, you need to have the awareness of what you are doing. If you are in the sitting posture, formal sitting, don't do this type of thing, because this is not meditation. This is like contemplating right thought, trying to arise the memory of the good moments in life. So of course during this moment when you do this, you are actually creating what they call not so much of the negative thought. It's trying to create some good memory of good moments that you have gone through. So it's different from arising like a very positive type of thought, like thought of gratitude, thought of what they call respect, reverential salutation. So if you recall to mind the great virtue of the Buddha, then from here, from your heart, you have this deep gratitude. That is different from your normal thinking. The normal thinking that try to arise the memory of the good moment, this one actually is a type of thought that just come out and make you feel good. That's it. Anasana. It's just thought, but it doesn't come from the heart. But if it's like the Brahma Vihara, or the good thought like gratitude, sincerity, kindness, gentleness, where you can feel it from your heart, understand? Like when you arise those things, it's not just a thought. This is different. This one is more of the combination of feeling, and from your heart it come out. This one can be very powerful. If you know how to do this, then it's okay. But the best way is still actually to relax your body and mind, silent, because when you are in a formal meditation, you are here to train your mind to be in a state of relaxed inner awareness, silent, to decondition the thinking. If you try to reflect, recall, you actually stir the thinking again. Understand? So what normally people do is, they try to actually do something in the meditation, thinking that by doing that, they are more peaceful, more happy, and less sleepy. These are what they call trying to come up with skillful means to actually change the mind state that is happening. Especially people who have sloth and torpor, or they find it very difficult to maintain the silent awareness within. There's a lot of restless thinking, thought coming and all those things. The hindrance are arising. So they will try to do something. So the Buddha actually got teach. At the retreat, I explained to one of the lady, there are five ways for you to overcome the negative thought or the hindrance of mind. First, the Buddha said, think of the direct opposite wholesome thought. Understand not? You have a lot of, let's say, anger or unhappiness or restlessness, then you have to think of the direct opposite. Anger, you think of what they call metta, you read it love. When you have the opposite wholesome thought, that negative thought cannot arise. Like you got a lot of what they call fear, worry, anxiety, then you reflect on calmness, understand not? You reflect on the Saddha or the confidence in the Buddha and his teaching. These are opposite wholesome thought to counter the negative thought. Or when you have hindrance of mind like restlessness, Then you tell yourself, I need to reverse this restlessness through a wholesome thought. So you can either calm your mind down by chanting the nine great virtues of the Buddha, or you can just chant the salutation to the Buddha. Or sometimes they chant the Mahayana mantra. Om Mimi Pimi Hom, or Namo Bansu Sujia Moni Pho, or Namo Kwansi Imposa. That's why they use this mantra to calm it down. Or you can think of the direct wholesome opposite. So this is the first way. The second way is the Buddha say, reflect on the consequence of allowing this heedless thinking, this hindrance, this ill root or unwholesome thought to continue to arise. The consequence is it will condition you into more negativity, more heedlessness, and you will entangle your life more, and this mind will not be trained. So the danger of it is it will fall. It will not lead to a better mind state. It will not lead to the training of the mind. So sometimes when you have this wrong thought, it will condition your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your restlessness, and your unhappiness. So once you understand, then you tell yourself, I have to determine to reverse this because I am here to meditate. I am not here to waste my time. I'm not here to allow my mind to proliferate like that. So you tell yourself, I have to develop the spiritual faculty. That's how you counter it. Through knowing the consequence, you will not allow it to happen. Then you stop it. Means you will have to tell yourself, this is not what I want. I see the danger, so I need to reverse all this. So you determine, then you did reverse. So this second way can help. When you see the danger of this heedless thinking or heedlessly allowing this unwholesome thought and negative thought to arise. Then the third way is the best, which is the meditative one. The Buddha say, whatever mind state that arises, whether it's emotion, anger, sleepiness, restlessness, or unhappiness, you only need to accept this reality. Silence your mind. Don't react to it. Just aware, silent. When you silent and accept the reality of the moment, you realize you don't have to do anything. That mind state will settle down. It doesn't settle down is because you give it too much of mental energy. That's why you continue to feed that mind. That mind continue to have that way of heedless thinking. Wanting to think this, wanting to think that, wanting to do this and wanting to do that. The mind is active. It try to come up with something to replace what he doesn't like, what the mind doesn't like. So this third way, if you know how to apply, is the real meditation. You just relax and silent. Means you accept the reality of whatever that goes on, whether pain, numbness or what, you continue to relax and silent your mind. Now, through this, the mind will settle down. It will become peaceful. Then sometimes the hindrance can come, like sleepiness may replace that mind state. Then when the sleepiness comes also, you don't fight. You don't try to struggle with it. You don't say that this is a bad mind state. It's a hindrance of mind. Then the Buddha say you are aware that this hindrance of sleepiness or sloth and torpor is there. Then you silence your mind. You continue to relax. Then you see what happens. When you accept it and don't fight it, this so-called sloth and torpor, there will be a shift of consciousness. The mind will become bright and clear by itself. That energy will go in. Because when you don't fight it, there is no aversion, no anger towards it. And the mind becomes what they call in a state of equanimity. When the mind is in the state of equanimity, it can actually develop the consciousness and the energy, the silent energy of the so-called pure mind or awareness. And this is the one that actually shifts. That all of a sudden your mind becomes very, very bright. Then there's a lot of energy. The virya start to come in. Then you realize, your sleepiness is gone. And then it can actually reverse. So silence your mind don't react, don't stir, don't do anything is the best. The very flowering of that thought is the ending of that thought. Yeah. If you don't feed it, the original state of mind before the stirring will come back to you. You will realize the peace and the tranquility and the silence. Yeah. The trouble is, human beings cannot understand this. So they try to do something to achieve the calmness and the peace. That is where the problem is. Yeah. Then the fourth way is more important. The fourth way, the Buddha said, is the wisdom way. You have to ask yourself, how does my mind become what it is? How does it stir? How does it become sleepy? How does it become angry? So like the Buddha said, you must see how the arising of this hindrance of mind comes to be. How the non-arisen hindrance can arise and come to be. So when you see the cause, how it comes to be, you will know how it can reverse. So retrospectively, the next time when you actually encounter all this, you will know how to handle it. Then you will come to know how the non-arising of this arisen, yeah, hindrance or unwholesome thought come to be. Yeah. Means you know the condition behind is arising, now you know the condition behind is ceasing. Then when you are very skillful, when you are able to do it very well, the Buddha said, one day you will come to know how the non-arising of this unwholesome mental state or hindrance of mind in the future, how it will not arise anymore. Inside, you will know very clear. Then you realize you are different. Because it cannot arise already, because through wisdom you have developed the understanding. So this fourth way is actually the Satipatthana, Dhammanupassana. The Buddha talked about the six internal sense bases and the six external sense bases. So every time when something happens, it has something to do with the sense door consciousness. Either something you see, you hear, or you think, then it conditions it. Tactile is also possible, but less. Tactile is normally your feeling, whether it's pain or numbness or whatever. Then when it comes to smell and taste, it's only when there is very strong or very pungent type of smell, or when you are eating something. So these two senses are less problematic. But the one that actually create a lot of negative reaction is your thinking, your seeing and your hearing. These are the one very active inside them. So the Buddha said, if you can trace the origination factor, means before you get emotional or unhappy, there was none of this. The moment your mind stir and this emotion come in, your unhappiness or your fear, all this that come in, you will come to know it come in through certain conscious memory. Whether something from your seeing consciousness that recall through your memory, or what you hear, you recall through your perception and memory, or what you recollect through your thinking, the past memory, because there is condition for it to arise. Then you start to know the stirring of the mind come from this lack of understanding of how you function as a human being. How this mind react and stir through your delusion, your ignorance, your conditioning, your insecurity, your fear and all those things. Then you start to see, oh, this is how it comes to be. Then the Buddha said, retrospectively, reverse it. So the next moment, after you have contemplated, reflected, and after you have meditated, you come to realize how it originates, you will know how to manage it. Means the next moment you see it, if the wisdom is there, you realize it doesn't arise anymore. Then thought has got no power. What you see, what you hear, what you think becomes something that is very, very natural to you. Something that is very easy for you to understand. Then you realize this consciousness, this thought, and all this so-called phenomenal world they cease to have any power over you because of the wisdom, the understanding. So this is how through wisdom it will actually reverse all these things. So the final understanding is when you have this understanding and wisdom, your mind becomes different. It does not stir anymore. That's how you have samadhi. The samadhi is the unwavering mind, collected mind that has wisdom, upeka behind. And this upeka is born of wisdom. That's why every moment of sense experience, it doesn't waver anymore, it doesn't stir anymore. It sees things as they are and is able to accept the reality of the moment, the world for the world, whatever it is, just the way it is. When that mind becomes like that, there is wisdom, there is panya. Because of panya, there is no more suffering, there is no more clinging, there is no more grasping, there is no more delusion. So that fire aggregate of form and mind will not be afflicted, will not be affected. So these are the four ways you can actually develop the understanding to actually counter all this unwholesome state or hindrance of mind. Then the last one is, the Buddha said, if the first four he teach you doesn't work, then you have no choice, is it? You must determine through your own self-determination to abandon it. Because if the first four he teach you doesn't work for you, means you have to actually use your own determination, he said. If your tongue against your palate, you have to determine to abandon that wrong thought. Means the Buddha said, whatever the Dhamma way he already tried, and if you cannot apply, you must use your own determination to abandon that unwholesome thought. So these are the five ways that the Buddha taught. So coming back to your question, Stephen, if I don't get your name wrong, Stephen, yeah. When you are in the sitting, try not to reflect and think that way. But when you are out of your sitting, you can. But when you want to do this type of reflection, you must actually arise the second turning wisdom. You use it to contemplate and reflect on the Dhamma. You don't go and recall the happy state of mind and memory and make yourself feel good. This is like somebody actually to say that is daydreaming is a bit extreme. But it's like you enjoy your good memory. And this one don't really bring forth understanding and wisdom. It's more like gratifying your thought, understand, trying to bring out the good thought, the happy memory. Not to say it's bad or good. It is what that you can do if you want to. But it doesn't really bring about the understanding, the meditative understanding. The one that the Buddha actually advised is the second turning wisdom. He called it Chintamaya Panya. Chintamaya Panya means after you have heard his teaching, the Dhamma under the first turning. That's why first turning he calls Suttamaya Panya. Sutta is the discourse of the Buddha. Wisdom born of hearing the sutta is the first turning wisdom. If you can understand, you have that wisdom. You can become awakened like Kondanya. But let's say you cannot, the Buddha said. Then you move to the second turning, is it? The second turning, the Buddha gave you every truth. He gave you one, what they call, one stanza to help you to reflect and contemplate. Like the first noble truth, you reflect on the reality of life and existence, the first noble truth. Then the Buddha said, this noble truth of dukkha is to be understood. You reflect, you contemplate, and you ask yourself, 6 o'clock already. Why did the Buddha say this? Understand not? Then, after you have inquired deep into it, then you will come to understand why the Buddha said dukkha is to be understood, because it's a noble truth. If you cannot understand what dukkha is, you don't even know that you are caught in the midst of suffering. You don't even know that you suffer due to this noble truth. So the advice of the Buddha to reflect and contemplate deep into this Noble Truth is very important. So the moment you understand the purpose of this reflection and advice, you will know how to silence your mind, and you throw up this inquiry. Why did the Buddha say this Noble Truth of Dukkha is to be understood? Then the answer will come to you, because when you reflect and contemplate with a silent mind, this mind is creative, it's not thinking, it's aware. Then with the awareness, the Dhamma that has the condition will surface. And then you will come to know, oh, no wonder, the Buddha want me to understand. Because under the first turning, he just proclaimed, I never reflect, I never contemplate. So when I reflect and I contemplate, I ask myself, why did the Buddha say birth is suffering? And then I reflect on the process of birth. And then I start to see. Ah, then I understand. This is how you develop the wisdom. This type of contemplative wisdom and understanding is relevant, but not the one that recall the good memory. Okay? So this part maybe you all slowly will come to understand. So right thought and wrong thought, you see, you have to understand what is right thought and what is wrong thought. You don't get confused by this too. Because this one, the right thought is not think of good thought. Right thought here, the Buddha means whatever that brings about understanding, goodness, wholesomeness is right thought. Wrong thought are thought that condition your negativity, your karmic negativity. Thought that condition your fear, worry, anxiety, unhappiness, sorrow, lamentation, selfishness, lustfulness, and all. These are all wrong thought. Whereas right thought is all the thought that will bring about wholesomeness, goodness, what they call understanding, harmony, and all those things. So it will allow you to develop the wisdom and the understanding of the Dhamma. These are all right thought, appropriate thought. Not the one that bring about desire, joy, happiness. Understand not? So good thought and right thought are different. Good thought is the one you say good because you like it. But right thought is that which will condition wholesomeness, virtue, understanding. Like when I have right thought with regards to the law of karma, straight away I will reflect and contemplate, and when I understand, the right thought will condition me to follow the advice of the Buddha. Understand not? I will avoid all evil to good and purify the mind. This is right thought. Understand not? Because I reflect, I contemplate, I understand. The moment I understand, then I come out with the right thought. I must not be heedless anymore. This will give rise to the determination to actually develop the cultivation. Then your virya can come about. These are appropriate right thought. Whereas good thought is different. Good thought can make you happy, joyful, and all those things. But it need not be right thought. Understand not? So that is the slight difference that you need to understand. There is nothing wrong with doing that type of reflection and thinking. Because sometimes as a human being, you know, you need to reflect on your good past relationship or experience. Especially parents, you recall the good old days when you are with your children, when they were very young, very innocent. They were so cute and all those things. Then sometimes you recall the good memories of your relationship with your spouse, your parents, and all those things. So you can have that type of memory. You can actually go through it. But if you can do it with understanding, means with awareness, then from there you develop the gratitude towards them. Understand not? Then you develop the sincere care and what they call love towards them. Then it becomes beneficial. Understand not? But if you just want to recall and have the sweet memory, then it doesn't serve much purpose. Understand not? But when you recall and bring about goodness, what they call wholesome state of mind, then there is a purpose behind. There is a good purpose behind that memory. So when you know how to arise the appropriate thought, then your awareness will tell you whether this is right, appropriate thought or not. Otherwise, you will have to abandon those thoughts. Because sometimes when you condition yourself to every time think that thought, it become a habit. And every time you have nothing to do, you just want to recall. Like you listen to certain type of nice song and music, it become habitual. You just want to listen to it. It make you feel good. But in listening, you didn't develop much wisdom. You only feel good. That is what they call, you like that thing. So you like, but you don't go and attach. You can have it once in a while when there is condition to have it. No harm, relax and listen to the music you like. Develop that calmness, that peace within. But when you listen with the clarity of awareness and mind, it's totally different. That's why I want you to understand how to reflect, how to contemplate and how to listen. Then everything has its meaning. But if you don't know, then it becomes a craving, understand? A desire. You just want to listen to that nice music because it's nice to you. But for those who have this clarity of mind, they don't listen with the ear, understand? They listen with the heart. Then when they listen, there is clarity. There is clarity. And they can actually feel the music inside their heart, understand? And that is a totally different type of listening. So as you progress, you will come to understand all this. Then you will actually have the understanding of what thought is, what that mind is, what that nature is, what that feeling is, what that emotion is. The feeling also got many types. The very wholesome one, like I told you just now, gratitude is a very good, what they call, feeling. It's a very wholesome type of right thought. Understand? Then the gratitude, the respect, the sincerity, the kindness, the gentleness, the goodness. All these are very wholesome, right thought. But if it's just to enjoy, it's a craving, a desire, then it's no more. That means you are indulging in the sense experience. Okay, we better end. Okay. 6:08. Transfer merits, then after that you make your aspiration. Okay, sharing your merits with the devas. Akasata cha bhumata devanaga mahindika punyang tang anamoditva chirang rakkhantu loka sasana. May all beings inhabiting space and earth, devas and nagas of mighty power, share these merits, and may they long protect the dispensation. Ittavata chamehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anamodantu sabasampati siddhiya. May all beings share these merits which we have thus acquired, and may all devas rejoice, and may it contribute greatly to their well-being and happiness. Okay, transfer merits to departed one. Idang menyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang menyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang menyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Let this marriage accrue to departed relatives, and may they all too be well and happy. Okay, we invoke the blessing for the country. Devo vasatu kalena sasa sampati hito cha pito bhavatu loko cha raja bhavatu dhammiko. May the rain fall in due season, and may there be a rich and good harvest, and may the world be peaceful and prosperous always. And may the government of the day, the king and the ruler, be righteous. Then we make our aspiration. Ipmina punyang kamina mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yawa nivana patia. By the grace of this merit that we have thus acquired, may we never follow the foolish, but only the wise and the enlightened one until Nibbana is realized. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, pay respect to the Buddha, Kuan Yin, and all the other worthy ones.